Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two, gentlemen? Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome to the Airport Lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast, much like the NHL's disciplinary committee, suspect. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend and the best pickup basketball player in Fort Richmond, Vaughn Mitchell. How's it going, buddy?
Well, welcome to another episode of Watch the World Burn. What the difference a week makes. Toronto at Edmonton out, Boston out, Colorado out. Apparently, we're not the only one where the world is burning down.
It's Schadenfreude, but man, that feels good. Especially the Leafs. I don't want to take too much pleasure out of other people's misery, but I'm not going to lie. That makes me happy.
It's not even that, is that there was this span of time where the only, you know, organization in the NHL that had problems was ours. Everything was fine everywhere else. And then you have, a week later, these storied franchises, these front runners, you know, experience a little bit of what we're going through. And then all of a sudden, you know, that everyone's treating everybody all the time. Everything's the problem, you know, and we're, you know, beset for an off season of complete chaos and anarchy as every player gets traded to every other team.
We should just switch. It's like, sorry, exactly. Just switch spots.
We're not going to focus on that today. We're going to look back at the season and assign some grades, assign some blame, as the case may be. And, you know, we're going to do it, and then we're going to move on. But I can't say it's been a great time, but let's get at it, Mike.
Yeah, so we're going to use the old – we were trying to think of a grading system, and we already have one built in. So we're going to break down various aspects of the Jets 2022-23 season via the MAC, or sorry, the WAC to MAC continuum.
WAC to MAC continuum.
So we'll go through, you know, hopefully as succinctly as possible, give our thoughts on the various aspects and portions of Jetsdom, and give our sort of WAC to MAC continuum grade on each, and then maybe an overall grade. Does that good? Sound good?
Let's do it, Mike.
All right. Well, let's get goaltending out of the way.
All right.
Let's just, you know, again, at the end of the day, you know, I think it could be summarized rather succinctly that Hellebuyck obviously had a much better season than last. He was fourth in goals saved against expected. Last year he was eighth, and he's a Vezina Trophy finalist. So I don't think we need to say too much more. Obviously, the playoffs were disappointing, but regular season he was back to his regular self. And then the only, you know, big save Dave was not as advertised, probably should have hung on to Brassois. You know, didn't really matter anyway because he doesn't get much work. So I'm going to give goaltending a 8.5 because, again, it is sort of the bedrock of which the Jets organization sustains itself.
Yeah, I'm in line with that. I gave it the grade, a similar grade. I gave it a grade of an A, which corresponds to an 8.0 or an 8.5. That's entirely fine. But that grade is based almost entirely on the term work. The final exam was a bit of a disaster.
That's well said. Yeah, if they're grading like some exams where it's 100% of your final grade.
Oh, it wouldn't have been good.
We would have had a different outcome.
Yeah, I think they're glad they're not in the Asper School of Business. I think, if I recall correctly, a lot of the exams in that faculty were 100% finals. I think Connor Hellebuyck very much needs an economics or political science, political studies background where there's a lot in the term and a lot less on the final exam.
A lot of papers.
Yeah.
All right, let's switch to defense. Now, we made some, I think some, you know, it was statistic and otherwise, improvements in with respect to, again, I'll use my benchmark from last year. That's probably not fair. Should base it probably more on an average. But we did improve in our goals against per 60. You know, expected goals against were much better. And the biggest thing is the high danger chances because, you know, it's difficult to discern defensive prowess between your goalie just being a lot better or really good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've highlighted this on several occasions, but it was something where we still give away the puck too much in the defensive end. We were second worst in that behind Montreal. And our rush defense still leaves a lot to be desired, and we've talked about that in the past. And I just want to kind of give a shout-out to Sandberg. I thought in terms of all the you know, we could talk about Morrissey. We could talk about all the guys if you want. But I did want to shout him out or call him out specifically because a bit of a revelation. We were mired in the depths of Logan Stanley playing time, and he kind of took the reins and held on to that sixth spot. And I thought was, you know, right through the stretch, was one of our better defensemen, and he's young. And so a lot of hope moving forward. And so I'll give it a – I'm going to give Jets D overall a 6.5 out of 10 on the whack to Mac. I'm trying to be generous. I mean, we're going to get to it. I'm tipping my hat. But Neil Pionk might bring that back to a 3 just on his own. But overall, I thought, you know, Dylan and Schmidt both had rebound years that I thought were pretty good. So, you know, we were a bit above average, I think.
I'm very close to where you are. I give it about a 6.85 to 6.9, which is a B minus. And this is a great example of how, of why group work sucks, because the work of three really dragged down the work of another three. And, you know, I think if you take a look at DeMello and Morrissey and Sandberg, they would grade much higher than a B minus. But really, we're not getting everything that we need from the Schmidt and the Dylan, and certainly not from Pionk. And they really dragged down the grade of the group. Sandberg was revelation is too strong of a word, but you know what I mean?
Like, no, you're right. It's hyperbolic.
It was hyperbolic for sure, but at the same time, you know, the emergence of young players like Barron and Sandberg and Perfetti are they're going to lay the foundation for the next generation of Winnipeg Jets. And I think the emergence of those three and kind of in this year was really heartening. So yeah, group work sucks sometimes. B minus for the defense corps.
Okay. Now let's switch to offense. You wanna start us off?
Yeah, for the forwards, I gave a B minus. Lots of hope to begin the season. We saw a dominant play from PLD and KFC in the first half. Scheifele was on fire scoring goals. The fourth line was dominating night after night. You know, the Jets just couldn't regain their form after losing Essamont and Perfetti from the lineup. Who knew they'd be so important? And who could have predicted that Wheeler would decline so rapidly? If only there had been signs in previous seasons.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
I did like the additions of Nino and Vladdy, but those were attempts to paper over problems in the roster and weren't ever going to be impactful enough to fix the problems in the lineup. The constant churn of the line combinations wasn't good. I think we had some spottiness. I think, you know, Ehlers missing a whole chunk of time hurt the group. You know, Scheifele with 42 goals, that's impressive. But it was all up and down, and there were short periods of times where everyone was connected and everyone was, you know, rowing in the same direction. And those were really fun times, and we had some fun on a few podcasts, but overall this group couldn't manifest what the coaches wanted them to do. And we can debate all night long as to who carries the blame for that.
Yeah.
But I think at the end of the day, you are what your record says you are. There were some good individual performances, but not a lot of group work. Group work.
Look at you and the group work. You're a TA all of a sudden.
You know, work is in my brain right now.
So I'm giving it a 5 out of 10 on the whack and back, a narrow D. Again, at the end of the day, you know, we were in a lot of respects a bottom third offense. Our Corsi rating improved dramatically as the year went on, and we were top 5 in the last 20 games in that regard. But our goals per game were 21st, faceoff percentage, which depending on your level of care for that, we were 21st.
I'd like to take his face off.
Shooting percentage, 18th. Expected goals per 60, we were 14th. And again, for a team as talented as this one on paper, I find that a bit unacceptable. Like, I mm-hmm. think, you know, PLD statistically, just your goals, assists, and points, had kind of a career year. And Scheifele had a career year in goals, but was, you know, sort of fell short of his point per game pace. Connor obviously wasn't as good as his Lady Bing season. Wheeler is pretty much in a wheelchair. And mm-hmm. I think the problem for me, and it's sort of twofold. The first is, I don't think, you know, we had a real cold slump there in the second half. and nobody was scoring. No. But then the second part to it is that when I look at the teams that are left, and again, this is myopic analysis, and it's very reactive. But I look at the teams left in the Stanley Cup playoffs, Dallas, Vegas, Carolina, and Florida, and I look at their forward lineups. And mm-hmm. I look at sort of who's the sort of quintessential leaders or de facto leaders, and it's Aho, it's Stone, it's Robertson, and it's Tkachuk. And I started digging through an evolving hockey, started digging through their ramp profiles, and you know what all of them have in common?
I do, because I saw your tweet, but please continue.
Yeah, they're really solid defensively. And it's something where we don't have that guy. Like, no. We have Scheifele, Connor, PLD, he gets more credit than I think he deserves defensively, because when he's off, he's off. Like, I watch him loaf around the defensive end too many times for my liking. And that's, you know, again, not only was the offensive production not all the way there, but if you're not, like, unless you're Connor McDavid, you got to play some defense. If you're not adding anything on that, and my boy Ehlers, he's just as guilty. Like, all of these guys, none of them, like, so our offensive guys can score but can't play defense, and our bottom six guys can't score to save their lives but play defense. Like, there has to be more of a mix of guys who are good at both things. Like, your Paulie Walnuts, your, like, guys that, you know, may not be put a bunch of stats up on the board, but can put the puck in the net and play a comprehensive form of hockey. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. And it is, you know, very, very selective in sample sizes and the players I chose. And the, you know, every year is different. There's not the same four teams in the Stanley Cup semifinals every year. But it, just something I thought about, because something with this team, we keep saying it year over year, they're so talented offensively, and yet we still suffer through goal droughts. And we haven't had much playoff success since 2018. So, yeah, I'm giving it a 5.
Gotcha.
All right. Let's go to quote-unquote special teams. So, I think our power play – well, do you want to start with power play or penalty kill? Your dealer's choice.
Do you want to do coaching? Or do you want to do that at the end?
Sure, let's do coaching at the end, because he's the mastermind.
All right.
I'm going to give the special teams a 6. Obviously, a much improved penalty kill. We finished sixth, killing at a rate of 82.4%. And then, you know, juxtaposed to that, the power play, we were 22nd, scoring at a rate of 19.3%. And expected goals, we were 22nd in that regard. And so it's just something like, and one of the stats that I found was the goals for above expected, we were second worst. So we were getting kind of similar chances to the other teams. We just weren't capitalizing. And mm-hmm. some of that could be luck. Some of it just strategy, because we're not shooting in the right places. But it's something where I was very pleased with the penalty kill, and obviously less so with the power play.
Yeah, I separated them out. I gave the power play.
Like
a 5.5. You know, for me, a better power play, or a power play that was more effective, would have meant several more wins for the Jets. And I think it cost them places in the standings. There were stretches where we simply weren't scoring on the power play and losing some tight games. Overall, the power play seemed quite fixated on trying to score in a particular manner, which to me didn't seem like a sustainable paradigm. They wanted to score goals from low percentage areas on the ice. They seemed overly fixated on trying to set up Josh Morrissey from the point, and overly fixated on trying to get that one timer going from wide outside the circles, not in tight, not from the high danger area, but too wide. And I just felt that they were low danger. Like, it would work every once in a while, but just because I take a girl home from the bar once in a while doesn't make me good looking. My point being this, you know, they seemed to insist on doing something a certain way because it worked once, but that wasn't going to get them enough action over the long run, if you get what I mean. As for the penalty kill, I was much more bullish. I gave it a 9. While not quite as aggressive as I'd like to see the unit play, the results are not to be questioned. I think they were excellent. I think what helped get them there was a keen view to sticking to the plan, and they stuck to the plan. Unlike the power play in 5.5, which was constantly churning or seeking success
with a model that wasn't
being successful. They, for some reason, even though it may not be what I have chosen, they found a way to make it work and they kept doing it. They didn't get bored with success and try to mix it up unnecessarily. They kept it the way it was. So I thought they were, you know, we didn't take a ton of penalties, so I think our goal differential overall, if you set aside the percentages, we had a positive goal differential on special teams. We scored more power play goals than we gave up. So overall, there was a net positive there. But I do think that that long stretches at key times where we weren't scoring on the power play really affected our outcomes, our wins, and our positions in the standings. And it put us in a tough spot, the 8th seed going into the playoffs, whereas perhaps another matchup would have been a little bit better for us. So very disappointed in the power play.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I on the PK, I'm not a fan of Saku's game, 5-on-5, even a little bit.
But
dude can kill some penalties. I'll give him credit. He's not flashy. Yeah. You don't really notice him, but he plays good positional hockey. He's got a decent stick. And, you know, and Lowry, obviously, I think outside of Hellebuck, is our best penalty killer. And even guys we bring in, like AJF and Gustafson and Gagne for a period of time, all of those guys seem to just slot into a role, and as you put it, just do what you're told.
Yeah,
don't run around. You know, that was, we were guilty of that a lot in the past. Is you get running around and chasing our tail, and it was very static, and I think that served them well. So yeah, no, that's good points.
Yeah, one quick last point is that I do think it was systems driven because for a long time, you know. For Hellebuck, his save percentage regressed more to the mean on the penalty kill. They say your goaltender has to be your best penalty killer, but it wasn't an area of strength for Hellebuck. He was really strong 5-on-5, and when you force him to move quite a lot, even though he reads the play very well, you know, he's a bit of a guy that will read a play and then get his body in the right position, and you have to have a perfect shot to score a goal. But, you know, you can get him moving around and take advantage of – it's not a lack of athleticism. I think he's a really good athlete. But if there's a way to make him average, that's the way to do it.
Yeah,
so I do think that throughout the course of the year, they had a really good system. Hellebuck did well on and improving his save percentage in on the penalty kill. And so, yeah, I think it was as systems-driven as anything else.
No, and speaking of systems, that leads us right to coaching.
I'm ready to go in, coach. Just give me a chance.
All right, I'll kick it off.
All right,
I gave it a solid D. Like most attempts to reconnect with an old boyfriend, everything was fine for a while until it wasn't. Pretty soon it was the same old, and all the former problems were there reappearing. Neither party really had any answers to solve the underlying problems. In fact, at the end, both sides were actively trying to undermine one another. Time to move on. Don't stay around for another year because you left your CDs in his truck. No more excuses. We need a clean break.
Are you Dr. Drew now? Do you have like a serious radio relationship? I like it. I gave it a 6. Which is, you know, tantamount to about a C minus. I mirror your frustration and angst. Obviously, the season did not end well. I think a few things. I think the Jets improved systematically, as you say, on the penalty kill. I think systematically they improved defensively. I think he should get some good credit for unlocking Morrissey, who's been obviously, it's no rookie, and this was by far and away his best season, and I think a lot of that has to do with Coach Bones. And I think, you know, at least at the beginning, I think, you know, we vaulted ourselves in a spot which we almost relegated, but a lot of that, I think, was, you know, there was nothing but positive vibes coming out of the dressing room for 2-3 months. I do agree that, you know, and we've been over this, Ehlers having the eighth most ice time for forwards, Logan Stanley even dressing once, just things like that, and just sort of the open season on Jets players coming down the stretch when it was clear this team doesn't respond to public criticism very well. Just strategically, I don't think that's the best plan. And so I'm just going to say it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out next year, because clearly there's a divide between the players and the coach. So a lot of mend work to be done if this is to work for next season at all.
I agree. And the one thing else, I'll say two things real quickly. I'm happy that you're happy, or I'm glad that you're glad, or I'm positive that you're positive. So that's one thing. And Bones has shown that he will reach out in the summer, which is apparently something that Paul Maurice didn't do very often. And so I think those conversations, he's the type of guy that will initiate those conversations, and perhaps there is some hope in building a bridge.
You have Paul Maurice being the Eastern Conference.
I mean,
just kills me. Okay, why? It's everything, right? Anyway.
Correlation isn't causation.
No, I get it.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so all that in the books. We'll go through. Bon, I'll let you kick us off. Let's give an overall grade for the 2000.
We're pulling it all together. Pulling it all together. Yeah. Okay. You got to give me some leeway here, Mike, because I've been thinking about this. Okay. So, all right. In an attempt to bring it all together, we've just talked about the various facets of the Jets game. But when I look at it all, I give it a 6.5, a very, very middling 6.5. Just like me at the office, nothing really stands out as excellent here. Erratic performance from day to day, seemingly distracted at times, showed signs of promise, only to be followed by periods of lackluster play with inattention to detail. Seemed distracted by outside interests. Overall, just enough promise to let you down. So, obviously, this could have easily been taken directly from one of my performance evaluations.
The guy who does his job. You must be the other guy.
I have a soft spot for the Jets in my heart. You know, I kind of see myself in them. Other people's expectations are wholly unreasonable. And why are they my problem? That's what I say at the office. It's probably my boss's fault anyways. Listen, if this season was a movie, it would have been The Fifth Element starring Bruce Willis.
Oh, my goodness.
If you haven't seen it, The Fifth Element starts off rather well, but then takes an unexpected turn at the midpoint of the movie.
Weird fast.
And becomes somewhat of a comical farce. The Hollywood Reporter referred to the movie as narratively challenged, visually monotonous, and orally overpowering. Well, at least two of those things are accurately describing a Bones-coached hockey team. Variety magazine referred to the movie as a hodgepodge of elements that don't comfortably coalesce. Does that sound familiar?
Where did you get The Fifth Element, Paul? That is obscure. Good for you.
Well,
I watched it actually like a month ago. That's so weird. What timing? That is a weird movie, man. Yeah,
it's a
totally
weird
true.
Movie. Yeah. It's really good. And then it just takes a hard right turn about halfway through and becomes this weird thing. Like and for me, it really paralleled, as I tried to get across, I'm quite serious, it really paralleled the season. It was a solid start. And then just all of a sudden, everything changed and it just went in this different direction. And I wasn't as entertained as I was in the first half.
Well, I also gave it a 6.5. I got there by far fewer movie references, but I think at the end of the day, and this is how I view it, where if somebody at the beginning, and we've said this a few times already, but if somebody had said in September, hey, the Jets are going to, you know, have some flashes of brilliance, they'll make the playoffs, but then get dismissed, you know, rather summarily in the first round. I would have said
by the first overall seed.
Right. I would have said, yeah, all right. You know, I mean, that doesn't not meet my expectations for the season coming in. I think we got, obviously, and you can't sort of retroactively take where they were midway through the season away because it happened and we all went through it. But just from an objective perspective, I think that, you know, and not this is silly analysis, but Vegas beating Edmonton. kind of makes me feel better. Right?
I agree.
It really does. And again, that is just pettiness. But the fact that, I think before the Vegas series, we were confident to sort of bordering on, especially after game one and the first period of game two, we were very confident in the Jets' chances. And then it all sort of fell apart from there. But, we didn't lose to a JAG team. And I'm going to be honest, when I was doing my analysis for the Vegas Jets series, I was like, this is kind of a JAG team. We can beat them. But again, the sum is greater than the parts of that team, and they're well coached, and they play a good brand of hockey. And so it doesn't, again, in retrospect, it doesn't seem as bad. But I you can't ignore the fact that it was wildly disappointing from where we were to where we ended up. So again, I land on 6.5.
Yeah, I have to admit, I wasn't sad to see those YouTube clips of the Edmonton fans fighting one another in the
that
stands.
Was funny.
Yeah, so like I said, a lot changes in a week. So, all right, shall we move on to pre-boarding announcements?
Let's do it. Okay, for this season, your first class assignment.
Okay, my first class assignment brought to you by First Mining Gold, providing first class gold mining development advice and services since 2015. I think it has to be Josh Morrissey. Amidst all the chaos, one player more than any other reestablished himself not only with his teammate, but with those around the league. A near miss as a Norris candidate, Jomo had a first-class season and has thrown down a strong claim to be the next captain of the Winnipeg Jets. So my first-class assignment goes to Josh Morrissey.
Double down. I think we might have the same for both.
I don't know. I might surprise you, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, my first, I got to give a honorable mention to Connor Hellebuck because, especially the last few games there to make it into the playoffs, he was instrumental. But I had Morrissey again in terms of goals above replacement. He was our leader. Expected guard. He was second. Your boy Scheif was first, and he's first in goals for per 60. It just, again, statistically and otherwise, again, is he a defensive stalwart? Nope. But his offense and play generation more than makes up for it, and I think he got snubbed a little in the Norris. His play waned a bit coming down the stretch, but just a career year, obviously, and I think, like you say, deserves to be is our first class of the year recipient. Double down.
Unanimous consensus.
Look at that.
First class assignment to Josh Morrissey. All right, let's go to the penalty box. Brought to you, as always, by the personal injury law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe. Through your aches and pains, we'll get you monetary gains. Call us at 1-800-BARRATRY. That's 1-800-BARRATRY. Okay, do you want me to go or do you want to go?
You go.
All right. So who do I put in the penalty box for the entire season? PLD.
Oh,
yeah,
that field.
Yep.
Let's hear it. Let's do
much,
it.
Much, if not all, of the underlying uncertainty around the Jets is being caused by his lack of long-term commitment to the team. Instead of being able to quell the uncertainty around the Jets when he was traded here for Patrick Laine, it's only gotten worse since then.
Oh.
He has never been a stabilizing factor. Rather, he's been a destabilizing factor. And his play has been erratic as his tattoo selection.
Oh, I'm a sucker for the tattoo jokes. I love it. If you'd thrown a Home Depot reference in there, you would have hit a homer.
No, I like Home Depot. I'm not going to.
You're not going to synonymize the two?
I'm not going to equate the two. Yeah.
That's nice.
Who do you got?
All right. I got our friend Captain Chaos.
Captain Chaos.
Okay.
Yeah, Neil Pionk, again, for a guy that's making $6 million a year and had the second most ice time for defensemen, you're finishing last in goals above replacement, you're last in expected goals against per 60, you're just a huge defensive liability. I understand. I'm going to give him credit where credit was due. He was solid in the playoffs. And again, that was through necessity in some cases, but he had some good games and he played fairly decently. But I think he's lost a step.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's the same guy. Again, he was never he's never the roadrunner, but there are times where he's still good in short area quickness, but his long speed, I think, has taken a hit. And I don't know, whatever magic juice was sprayed over Morrissey, I think that was at the expense of a Pionk. You just can't have your sort of quote unquote second defenseman basically be one of the worst statistic players in the NHL. It's just that's a losing recipe. And so sorry, Captain Chaos, but you're in the penalty box with some kryptonite.
There you go. Get out of here.
All right. We're going to do a little in-flight entertainment. We're going to do these in the form of awards, season awards for some of the Jets. I'm gonna level with you, Vaughn. Mine are, I think we need some levity after this. Most of mine are pretty silly. So do you have one that is not ridiculous?
Well, I took a little bit different tact. I kind of went questions as opposed to awards.
Okay.
So I love the blend here. So as I was working on all my jokes for this, I only got two questions out. So this might be quick. So for you, Mike, who is your breakout player of the year? Who is the player that sort of jumped out at you that made a contribution far above what you were expecting going into the season?
Well, I spoke about Sandberg, so I'm going to go Cole Perfetti. I think that he showed that there are still obvious concerns. His relative size, ability to stay healthy, the speed a bit, I think, obviously, is a concern. I think he's got to work on his skating to a certain extent. But I thought, like, his playmaking and ability with the puck is by far and away top six NHL ready. And I think he had some bad breaks with respect to puck luck. I think he had like a 7% shooting percentage, and I think that'll improve. And honestly, again, this is what kills me. Like, defensively, his defensive metrics are one of the best of the top six forwards. Mm-hmm. Like, it's better than PLD, better than Connor, better than Scheifele. You watch that. If you watch him, like, he has great puck anticipation. He is in the right spot. He's back. Like, he's not fast, but he's always hustling back, and I think that bodes well for his future. Again, is he going to be a top 20 NHL player? I would be skeptical of that, but I think he's going to be a really solid top six forward, and so that makes me excited.
Yeah, I agree with all those points. I think there's three obvious candidates here: Morgan Barron, Cole Perfetti, and Dylan Sandberg. I give the nod to Dylan Sandberg. It's the durability thing, and there are small questions with Perfetti's game, which I hope that he is able to answer. There is the skating, there is the size, there's the durability. I think there are fewer long-term questions with Sandberg. He plays a style in which he could be one of the top six on the Jets' blue line for many years, perhaps a decade. So I think just maybe his ceiling isn't as high. I think the floor is very high for him. I think he ended the year as the Jets' third best defenseman. I think we're in good stead with all of those three. But the guy that really jumped out, I mean, I think just by the factor of being a relatively high first-round pick, you know, you can't be that. I'm not criticizing you, but you know that he comes in with some expectations.
Yeah,
and fair, Morgan Barron made a contribution, but he's not ever going to be in our top
no,
six.
No, I like him.
Yeah, and he's a little bit older too. So the guy that really took that step that impressed me was Dylan Sandberg. So he'll be maybe in the long term he turns into a Dylan DeMello, a guy that can pair with a top guy and really support him and be a steadying influence. Exactly. So yeah, he was my breakout player of the year.
No, I like, yeah, again, I think that's probably thinking with my heart rather than my head, but my head pick would probably be Sandberg for sure. All right, silly time. I have the BC Boy Sabotage Award.
Okay.
And so the...
Well, that's Neil Pionk.
I had a multiple choice. So
the multiple choice
for best saboteur was... And see, you might have to rethink this. Is A, PLD, B, Coach Bones, or C, Neil Pionk?
Oh, no, it's Neil Pionk. I go full Neil Pionk. The inspired, you know, the Galaxy Brain one would have been Blake Wheeler.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had him. He was an honorable mention. I only wanted to give three choices.
No, I think you very astutely outlined some of the challenges that Neil Pionk provides now as an NHL player, especially one that carries the cap hit that he does. And, I'm not I'm not optimistic that he can rebound, and I'm not optimistic about his role on the team going forward. I do think that he is very clearly a candidate that if we just get rid of him, that it will be addition by subtraction.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. What do you got?
Well, this one's a little forward-looking, and you brought up a great point as we were preparing for this, that we're going to get into this in our next episode. So maybe this will just be a touchstone for where we're going to with our next episode. And I think what's really brought this to the fore is hearing about some of the successes of the Jets prospects that are out there, specifically Brad Lambert with the Seattle Thunderbirds. So which Jets prospect are you most looking forward to watching or projecting into the NHL in the near future?
I really like Chaz Lucius, but he can't stay healthy, whatever. I mean, I'm not a doctor, but I'm not a big proponent of throwing around the term injury prone. But if there is such a thing, he's it. And like, mm-hmm. I've always been excited for him and his talent. But I mean, I think, if I recall, I was pretty adamant at the beginning of the season, and this was, I will fully admit, and it's mea culpa, a very stupid thing to say and propose. But I was like, let's just let Lambert play for 10 games. Because he was electric in the preseason. Now he struggled with the Moose, and I'm worried that all his production down two levels is maybe not as repeatable. Obviously, you got to move up two levels to get to the point. But I do think he's got, you know, even as a scouting report, right? Excellent skater, great with the puck, and so he's probably the guy. He'd be the guy I'm most excited about. I think he has the highest ceiling and probably the lowest floor.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you there on everything you said about Lambert. You know, he's only a year older than Connor Bedard, and he seems to be playing at that level. Now, that is being a year, just that year difference makes a huge difference down in the CHL. But I think he has made a case that he's going to be a solid NHLer sooner as opposed to later. But I'm going to go back to the first name that you raised, Chaz Lucius. I just like to say Chaz Lucius.
It's just a fun name.
But I think with what Lambert has shown and what people think McGroarty is going to be, if Chaz Lucius can rebound from all these injuries and come forward and be some type of contributing top six, top nine player in the NHL, I think that's really going to impact the long-term ability of the Jets to be competitive. If he is one of those guys that falls away and we essentially get nothing from that first-round draft pick, I think that will – it won't be, the end of the world kind of thing. It won't be a deciding factor on whether we can be successful going forward or not. But you can't lose too many of those first-round picks. Even look at the success the Jets have had with first-round picks, and it's been really good. We're still a middling team. We're still a team that is struggling to get over the hump into the elite part of the NHL. And we've had fantastic first-round picks. So I'm looking forward to watching him have an injury-free season and really play a chunk of games,
put it all
which
together.
He hasn't been able to do, and put it together. So I think if we can get Chaz Lucius healthy and playing a lot of hockey in combination with those other guys that we already have where their trajectory is looking really good, I think that things will be pretty happy, and we'll be talking a lot about them in 2 or 3 years' time.
No, I agree. All right. Well, let's end on this one, more silliness. It's
all right.
The William Shatner Award for best hair on the Jets.
AJF.
Oh, come on. You keep jumping on my... That's the only answer anyway. I'm not even going to give...
I know, it's
only is. It absolutely is. And just as a side note, it's almost unfair. I know he's a fringe hockey player, but that's a handsome man. Like, he's got the hair of Thor. He looks like Ethan Hawke. It's like... And he's an NHL hockey player? Come on, man.
He's too much man. That's why they had to bench him. Bonus was feeling, you know,
everyone
small.
Was feeling that, they were feeling insecure. It's like, this is too much. This guy's too much.
Yeah, it was too much.
All right. On that note, you want to take us out?
Absolutely. So, fellow travelers, that's it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks for joining us in the Airport Lounge. Check us out on Twitter at Airport Lounge 55, with all episodes also available on Apple, Spotify, and Overcast Podcast. Be sure to come back next week to the Airport Lounge, because the first round is always on us. Until then, go Jets, go. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real. The needle tears a hole, the old familiar sting. Try to kill it all away, but I remember everything. Thank you.